Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam. This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
Outside of 2018, Trevor Bauer has had a 4.19 ERA or higher in every season. Last year, he was SP33 in Roto and SP38 in fantasy points per game. Despite all of this, he's still SP22 in ADP. What are we doing? Welcome to Fantasy Baseball Today, Thursday, July 9th. Frank Stamfel, Scott White, and Chris Towers here for our Starting Pitcher Preview 2.0 Part 2. Chris, yesterday, you said that we should actually be calling this Starting Pitcher Preview 2.2. That might make a little bit more sense.
Yeah. I just, you know, you figure, you know, look, there's no right way to name this. We're all flying by the seat of our pants. We don't know what the future holds. But yeah, you know, 2.1 makes more sense, I think, as a naming convention. Because, you know, 2.0 part 2. First of all, it's a lot of P sounds, and that's always risky when you're doing audio recording. You never want to pop your peas. But second, it's a real mouthful. It's hard to keep track of. Version 2.1 is the way I would have gone with. But look, nobody asked me. And I don't want to overstep my bounds, Frank. This is your ship to steer. I'm just a stowaway.
Hey, man, look, if you have suggestions, I'm here for it. I trust you. You guys have been doing this a lot longer than I have. So version 2.2. Look, it took about, what is this, our 10th position preview to figure that out, but we finally figured it out. Scott is here as well. He is wearing a Texas Rangers hat. We're going to talk about quite a few Rangers today, Scott.
That was intentional, by design. Three Rangers we're going to talk about today, and all of them curious cases. Curious cases, those Rangers. Not helped by our curiosity is only propped up by the new stadium there in Texas and wondering how it's going to play.
The curious case of the Texas Rangers. We're going to start off with sleepers, breakouts, and busts. But first, I want to ask you guys if strength of schedule matters at all to you guys in this shortened season. I would argue that matchups matter more this year than ever before. I mean, a lot of those weird ERA seasons that we're about to see, it's going to be because the pitchers are going to have randomly really good matchups, and it's just really hard to predict those things. Ultimately, the five easiest schedules, according to last year's winning percentage, the Twins, the Indians, the Cardinals, the White Sox, the Dodgers. Does this matter, Scott? I mean, would you be targeting those pitchers more because they have easier strength of schedules?
Can you list the teams again?
Twins, Indians, Cardinals, White Sox, Dodgers. Mind you, there are three AL Central teams in there and four Central teams overall with the Cardinals.
I'm a little surprised. I'm a little surprised about the Dodgers being in there, but I'll take your word for it. I would agree with you that it'll matter more than ever this year because normally the schedule is pretty balanced. It's never completely balanced, of course, because, you know, teams play their own division more often and interleague play kind of changes things too. But between it being balanced and it being so long, you know, you can't really fixate on any one matchup too much. But obviously, it's less balanced and it's much shorter this year. So I do think it matters more than ever. I do also think there's a risk in kind of overstating the importance of it because baseball is not so much a matchups game. You know, it's not football That, you know, this is something, this is the form, a form of analysis that is often visited in football, and it's, it just doesn't work that way in baseball. So, you know, it's something to keep in mind, maybe slightly upgrade Twins pitchers, slightly downgrade someone else, but like you're not totally overhauling your rankings for it.
So here's the tough thing about that. It's like, yes, in theory, push Twins pitchers up your ranks. But if Jose Berríos, who will be the opening day starter for the Twins, pitches every fifth day, it lines up with the White Sox in Chicago, which I don't think we think that's a great matchup for this year.
No, it's not.
Home versus St. Louis, again, not a great matchup. Then he would get the Pirates at home. So that's another one. That's a good one. And then the Royals, but then he would get the Brewers. And so it would be, you know, three, and it would be at Miller Park. So it would be three, I think, actually out of his first five, it would only be two good matchups, right? It would be the Pirates and the Royals. And so, you know, that's one where, yes, this is going to matter. Matchups are absolutely going to matter more in a shortened season, because if you get a good matchup in a 12-game season, that simply matters more than it does in a 33-game season. Individual matchups don't really matter in a 33-game season, because it's all going to come out in the wash overall for the most part. But the way the schedule might actually work out, the Twins actually go face the Brewers six times in 10 days in a stretch from August 10th to August 20th, 11 days, six times in 11 days. It's possible that it lines up that Jose Berríos has to face them twice. That would not be a good thing. So it just, given how much rotations flip-flop, you know, maybe he actually just pitches every fifth day every fifth game instead of every fifth game. You know, like, there's a lot of different ways that it could work out. But, you know, I think the point is that there are too many variables for me to really count that. And certainly it would never be enough to move a player significantly.
Yeah, and I think that's well said. And I started looking at schedules yesterday, and I realized that I was excited about Twins pitchers, but they don't face the Tigers until late August. And then I think most of their games against the Tigers actually come in September. So, yeah, they might be able to help you in a playoff push or in your fantasy playoffs or down the stretch in a roto league. But you have to get that far first. So just keep these things in mind. Something that I tweeted out earlier, if you're looking for starting pitchers with strong matchups early on, these are teams that will face the Tigers in the first month, multiple series against the Tigers. The Reds, the White Sox, the Indians, teams who face the Giants multiple times in the first month, the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks, and then teams that face the Marlins multiple series in the first month. That would be the Phillies, the Mets, and the Washington Nationals.
You know where I think it's going to come in play more is when you're looking for like two start sleepers to pick up off the waiver wire. Like you mentioned the White Sox in there. You know, maybe like Reynaldo Lopez will be high on the two start sleeper list, as opposed to when you're drafting your team and your focus is mainly on how good the player you're actually drafting is.
It's funny you bring that up. I remember starting Reynaldo Lopez for a two-star week last year.
Reynaldo Lopez rarely works out well.
No, the thing was, I think he put up like 60 fantasy points in a two-star week last year.
You got a good one.
I just picked him up for that. I dropped him right after. I was like, wash my hands of the Reynaldo Lopez. I don't want to mess with this experiment anymore. I got exactly, well, not exactly what I wanted. Way more than what I wanted. I agree with you there, Scott. Sleepers, breakouts, and busts at starting pitcher. Let's get it started here before we jump into ADP review once again. Scott, your sleeper at starting pitcher.
My sleeper at starting pitcher. I didn't have him queued up yet, but I am going to go with... I'm going to go with Alex Wood, and I kind of have a renewed enthusiasm for Alex Wood after it waned there briefly, not really confident in the way the Dodgers were going to handle their pitching staff in a shortened season. But of course, back in March, they declared him one of their five starters. They had a lot of choices. They chose Alex Wood, a guy with a 5.80 ERA last year. But of course, that was in an injury shortened season with the Reds. The Dodgers have a lot of familiarity with Alex Wood, and they really like the work he did with driveline baseball. the pitching development program this offseason. It has a history of improving pitchers' velocity, and it appears to have done that for Wood. Back in spring training, he was sitting at 92-93, which was about as hard as he's ever thrown. And in fact, the last time he threw that hard for an extended stretch was the first half of 2017. I think it was the only time he's thrown that hard for an extended stretch. And he was unbelievably good for that stretch. He went 10-0 with a 1.67 ERA, 0.89 whip, 10.8 K per nine. Wood's always been a curious sort of pitcher who has put together amazing stretches. You know, obviously that was the best and one of the longest, but he's generally been good for a low whip and sometimes decent strikeout totals. But there's been a lot of inconsistency. If he can sustain that velocity over a 60-game season, I think he could be a must-start player for you. I mean, I'm not obviously expecting numbers quite that good, but he could be very good. And the reason I'm kind of emboldened now again is because of the way the Dodgers have talked about him just since players started reporting to camp. Dave Roberts mentioned three pitchers who he thought would be ready to go seven innings the first time out. One was Clayton Kershaw. One was actually Ross Stripling, which is interesting in its own right. And one was Alex Wood. He didn't mention Walker Buehler, curiously.
How dare you?
Alex Wood. So I think they plan on treating him like a full-fledged starter and not just part of like a piggybacking situation.
Scott, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. The past couple of days have listened to your starting pitcher previews that you guys did with Adam back in February, and your phone was going off in both of the previews that I listened to then.
It had been a while. there was a point, you know, really before Frank got here where it was like a daily occurrence.
Yeah.
And I feel like it had been like 3 or 4 weeks since I'd heard it.
Two days
in a row. We're back. We're starting the Scott White cell phone drinking game again.
Got to retrain my peeps. They got to know when I'm podcasting over here.
Oh, Mr. Popular, Scott White. Chris, when it comes to sleepers, that starting pitcher, who's your favorite?
Oh, there's a lot of options. Are you going with Mitch Keller?
Oh, no. I'm going with another Pittsburgh Pirate.
All right. So, yeah, I also really like Joe Musgrove. I really like Mitch Keller. They are two of my favorite sleepers at the position. And a big part of that, you know, I think a lot of the arguments that Frank is probably going to make in Joe Musgrove's favor will also apply to Mitch Keller, new pitching coach, more analytically minded approach. So I will put that one there, put a pin in it, and actually go with Matthew Boyd, who is starting pitcher number 45 off the board, 157th overall in ADP right now. And I mean, look, you can't get 240 strikeout over a course of a full season, that is, upside this late in a draft. There's just, can anyone else provide that? I don't really think so. Lance McCullers doesn't have the innings potential for it. And you know, that kind of skill just isn't out there. Matthew Boyd pretty much did that last season. What, he had like 230? No, he might've had over 245 actually. He was an elite strikeout pitcher last season who gave up like 39 home runs. That's way too many home runs, guys. You should not give up that many home runs if you can avoid it, but he probably won't do that again. That's too many home runs to hit. That should probably regress. And he added both I don't know if you can necessarily say he added a changeup. I think that's always been there, but he worked on it this offseason. And more specifically in spring training, he showed off a reworked version of the curveball that he kind of ditched last season. And you know, my hope is that curveball can serve a similar purpose to what Patrick Corbin's did when he introduced it in 2018, which was he used it more like you would typically use a changeup. It was almost exclusively against right-handed pit batters, and it was just to give them another look to avoid that platoon split. And it really, you know, it was pretty effective for him. Matthew Boyd's got great stuff, tons of strikeouts. If he can keep the home run rate to, like, the 10th worst in baseball, you're probably looking at a must-start fantasy pitcher.
Yeah, big fan of Matthew Boyd as well. He had 238 strikeouts last year. I have a stat regarding Matthew Boyd as well, which lumps him in with some great company. Qualified starting pitchers who had a chase rate of over 34%, a first-pitch strike percentage of 64%, and a swinging strike rate of over 12%. Matthew Boyd, Clayton Kershaw, Shane Bieber, Garrett Cole, Max Scherzer, Joe Musgrove, Justin Verlander, and Jacob deGrom. It's a pretty good company to be part of. So the skills are there for Matthew Boyd. He just has to cut down on those strikeouts. I mentioned the name, Joe Musgrove. I'm a big fan of Mitch Keller as well. Chris, you hit on some of the points there. Ray Searidge, no longer the pitching coach for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Oscar Marin is the new pitching coach there. He's more analytically sound. And Ray Searidge really preached a fastball-heavy approach, a sinker-heavy approach. And frankly, Joe Musgrove's secondary pitches, his breaking pitches, are much better than his fastball. Speaking of the fastball, his velocity was up in September last year. It was only four starts, but during that span, he had a 2.25 ERA and 11.8 Ks per nine. The velocity during spring, I was watching a few Pirates games. They were talking about it sitting 93, 94 again. So I think lots of reasons to be excited for both Keller and Joe Musgrove. I have him as my SP 44. He's SP 61 in ADP. I don't know that there is another pitcher that I am that high on compared to ADP than Joe Musgrove. So big fan of the Pirates starting pitchers there. Breakout, Scott, who's your favorite breakout at starting pitcher?
I think in 1.0, I focused on Max Fried here. And of course, I still like Max Fried, but yeah. I find I'm not actually drafting him that often. So I'm going to focus on somebody I've come around to more recently in my breakouts 2.0 column, and that's Kenta Maeda. Who I am drafting a fair amount of. And the story for Kenta Maeda goes that his talents were suppressed with the Dodgers in a number of ways. The biggest being that he had terms in his contract that they could keep the cost down by limiting his innings, basically. And I think his number of starts too. And they would transition him to the bullpen. Sometimes they'd move him in and out of the bullpen. They never let him pitch that deep into games, even though he's a very efficient pitcher. And even though the numbers show he's actually much better than the average pitcher the third time through the lineup. So they just didn't handle him the way his numbers and his performance suggested he deserved to be handled. And going to the Twins, they're not the pitching rich organization that the Dodgers are. They could, they really need Maeda to be a top of the rotation guy for him, which I think he has the upside to be. Last year, Maeda did have a 4.04 ERA, but with a 1.07 WHIP and well more than a strikeout per inning. His expected ERA, according to StatCast, was actually 3.26. And that, while the actual ERA has fluctuated throughout his career, the expected ERA has always been very low like that. So if you get the best case of Kenta Maeda performance-wise, and you add in the likelihood of him going 6 to 7 innings consistently now in the way the Dodgers never allowed him to, I think maybe you're looking at a top 20 pitcher here, and you can draft him outside the top 40, right?
He's the 48th starting pitcher off the board, which is just crazy.
I love it. I'll take it. I've been tempted to include Kenta Maeda in my large sum of pitchers with frontline potential in that group of 35 or whatever the number's at now. I've been tempted to include Kenta Maeda with that group. So that's how confident I am in him. Frankly, I'm more confident in him than Max Fried now.
Honestly, if he just hits his career marks, 3.87 ERA, 1.15 WHIP, 9.7 Ks per nine, he's going to be better than the 48th starting pitcher off the board. And I think you have reason to believe he'll be even better than that based on the expected ERA. Does a really good job of limiting hard contact, gets a ton of swinging strikes. 14.6% swinging strike rate last year, was seventh best among pitchers with at least 150 innings pitched. So big fan of Maeda as well. Chris, among the many breakout potential here, potential starting pitchers, who is your favorite?
Yeah, you know, I'm looking back at the starting preview, pitcher preview that I wrote. It hasn't been updated since like mid-June, so right before things came back, so I'll probably need to update it. I'm looking at it. I have Frankie Montas as a breakout, and that feels a little bit cheap because the breakout already happened last season, and so I just think it's a matter of him just, one, staying healthy, which has been a problem in his career, but also, you know, pitching the full season. And if he does that, I'm pretty very confident that he's going to be a very good pitcher. And so that's one that I'm just going to leave. I think I'm going to update the rest of them. But, you know, he had a 318 or sorry, a 2.63 ERA, 3.76 Sierra last season in 96 innings. The addition of the splitter last season was, I think, the key to unlocking everything because he's always had a hard fastball, and he has a pretty good slider. It's just he didn't have that third pitch, and so it made him predictable, and it made both of those pitches easier to hit. The addition of that splitter, you know, changed his whole outlook. It was an immediate swing and miss weapon. It was a very good pitch, and it made the other two pitches play up. And so that combination, it might have been a fluke. It's only 90 innings, but given that there was a legitimate change there, I think I'm more than willing to buy into it.
Chris, what if I told you that Frankie Montas is the 28th starting pitcher off the board and he averaged the 10th most fantasy points per game last year, just ahead of Shane Bieber?
I mean, he was pitching consistently deep into games last season. Yep. The one concern I do have, like I mentioned, there is a history of injuries there. He is not someone who has thrown a lot of innings, consistently throughout his career. But, I mean, you look at the results for all three of his pitches and – they were pretty freaking good last year. So I think he's an obvious value and a guy who is going to show that he's one of the better pitchers in the American League just by being on the mound this year.
Scott, you mentioned Max Fried as your breakout back when you did the first starting pitcher preview back in February. And that's who I'm actually going to go with here. Montas is someone who I love targeting. Zach Gallen, we talk a lot about as well, and we will talk about him today. But those guys are, I would say, a little bit more obvious. Max Fried, someone I also like. 4.02 ERA last year, a 3.32 xFIP. So could see some positive regression over a strikeout per inning. The command was the best of his career last year, better than anything we've ever seen in the minors. 54% ground ball rate, so he gets over a strikeout per inning, under three walks per nine, over 50% ground ball rate. He got better in the second half. The K per nine went up over 10 in the second half last year. He had a 3.63 ERA in that second half. And I was telling you guys about this before we started, but I was reading an article on The Athletic last night where Fried was talking about how he is developing a changeup and he's been working on this. If that can help him neutralize right-handed batters, last year they hit 281 against him. That could be the key for him. If this changeup can help him get right-handed batters out, then I think you could see him take that next step. It wouldn't surprise me if we're talking about him as, a third or a fourth round starting pitcher next year, taking that, Luis Castillo type leap. And to me, that would constitute a breakout for Max Fried.
I agree. The changeup would be a game changer. Just to put that xFIP that you mentioned in perspective, it was better than Walker Buehler, than Jack Flaherty. So I have a suspicion that those struggles against opposite-handed hitters are contributed to him underperforming his peripherals.
Guys, I gave my bust at the top of the show. It's Trevor Bauer. I wrote about it. I've talked about it. I'm not sure what else there needs to be. What else needs to be said regarding Trevor Bauer? Scott, quickly, who's your bust at starting pitcher?
Madison Bumgarner is my bust. He's probably my number one bust, regardless of position this year, and it's pretty easy to explain why. His numbers the last 2 years, basically ever since his dirt bike accident where he messed up his shoulder and his stuff hasn't been quite the same since. His numbers the last 2 years at home last year, it was 2.93 ERA versus 5.29 on the road. 2 years ago, 1.63 at home versus 4.97 on the road. Obviously his home was in San Francisco, the most favorable of pitchers' parks. He's not in San Francisco anymore. He's in Arizona, which is not such a favorable place for pitchers. It's kind of neutral, I guess, but definitely not San Francisco. And doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be his road self at home now, but he doesn't get that big advantage of pitching in San Francisco anymore. And I think that's helped sustain him ever since he lost a little bit of his stuff. So, it's hard to bet against Madison Bumgarner, given that he's the sort of pitcher who tends to rise above what you think he's going to do. Obviously, has a history of doing that, but I'm betting against him this year. He's my bust at starting pitcher.
Chris, who are you betting against at starting pitcher this season?
Oh, this is a really hard question to answer, and this is one of the ones that I think I'm going to change from the starting pitcher preview I wrote earlier this year on CBSSports.com. Because there I do have Mike Clevinger, and look, there's no way I'm going to draft Mike Clevinger his spot, but I do think given his ability to limit hard contact and limit damage on contact, even if he's not the guy he was last season, I think he has a pretty high floor. His injury history is not being factored into his price the way it is with some other pitchers. So, no, but I don't feel super strongly about that as a bust. The other one that comes to mind is Mike Soroka. Like, this is one thing that's hard. Like, Mike Soroka is not going to be as good as he was last season. And I'm doubtful he's going to be the number 24 starter, which is where he's being drafted. But it's really hard to actually call many pitchers this season a bust just because I don't see that many bad values. Mike Soroka is probably the closest. Like, I would not feel confident in him as my number two starting pitcher. I prefer someone with more upside there. So he's the guy I guess I'm going with, but I think this just highlights how much harder it is these days to actually identify a bust at starting pitcher. For me, at least.
Mike Soroka, SP24 off the board, and was a top 20 starting pitcher in both formats last year, SP17 in fantasy points per game, SP20 in Roto. Let's get into our ADP review, and we'll start right there. Mike Soroka is one of the pitchers we were about to talk about. Round 7, Jose Berríos. He's going on that 6-7 turn. Trevor Bauer, talked about him a little bit. Round 7. Round 8, Brandon Woodruff, 85.6. Mike Soroka. We actually got an email yesterday from Ryan Hart. He said, you guys like to sing Luke Weaver. That's more Adam's thing. So I kind of stole it.
I did pretty well with that.
But he said, why don't you guys ever go, Mike Soroka? It's a fair question. Mike Soroka's ADP, 88. Corey Kluber, 93.8. Sonny Gray, 95.6. And I'm just going to throw James Paxton in this mix based on his NFBC ADP in the month of July is 95. So right around Sonny Gray, and he's being drafted in this round 7, round 8 range again. Scott, does that make sense? James Paxton, the last name that I mentioned there, should he... Obviously, he had the surgery on his back. It was back in February. He was expected to miss the first maybe month of the season, maybe even more than that. But now he's healthy. He's ready to go. Should he be drafted in this round 7-8 range among the names that I mentioned?
I think I have him right around here, I guess. I might quibble with the exact spot for James Paxton.
You have Paxton SP28, so just behind this group.
Right. And you know, he did some things performance wise last year. He didn't live up to expectations in his first year with the Yankees, especially the increase in walks was curious. And, you know, he missed some time with injury. You wonder how much that contributed to it. But, you know, going back to his last couple of years with the Mariners, he was a player who we thought had the potential to contend for a Cy Young. I mean, the strikeout to walk ratio was among the best in baseball. And he still certainly showed that strikeout potential last year. So if we're confident he's healthy now and we're not as concerned about him missing time in a shortened season because he's a pitcher who has yet to deliver 180 innings in a season, but that kind of normalizes in a 60-game season. So I can definitely understand the enthusiasm for Paxton this year, and I might even share in it if he totally performed up to expectations last year. I'm playing it a little cautiously there because I'm not as confident in the performance for Paxton as I once was.
The one thing you can depend on him for is strikeouts, as you mentioned, Scott. Over the past two seasons, an 11.4 K per nine for Paxton was fifth best among qualified starting pitchers. Maybe not qualified, actually. I don't know if he would have qualified because he's dealt with so many injuries. But 14.2% swinging strike rate was eighth best among that time. But the ERA, a little bit higher, and the whip, a little bit higher. Again, pitching in Yankee Stadium. Chris, this group, Berríos, Bauer, Woodruff, Soroka, Kluber, Gray, Paxton. Fill in the blank. I would feel comfortable with one of these starting pitchers as my SP blank.
I would be comfortable with Sonny Gray as my SP2. And I have drafted Corey Kluber as my SP2. The word comfortable obviously does not factor into the conversation with that one. However, so the rest of them, it would be more like three, probably.
I think it's probably three for me for all of them. I mean, if you get one of these guys as your SP4, that would be fantastic. But then that means you're probably spending four of your first seven or eight picks on starting pitchers, which might be overdoing it a little bit. Scott, who is the pitcher you find yourself drafting most from this group?
It's Gray. It's Gray. There's been a lot of focus on how dominant Jack Flaherty and Yu Darvish were in the second half last year, but Sonny Gray was right there with them. Sonny Gray, to close out the season, had the same kind of amazing numbers. I'm trying to pull them up quickly here. 194 ERA, 0.95 whip, 11 K per nine over his final 15 starts. And yeah, he talked about it in the offseason how like he really feels like the Reds unlocked his potential, specifically with the slider and how he used it. It's a great swing and miss pitch. Of course, he's always been a fantastic ground ball pitcher. If you can be an elite strikeout pitcher and an elite ground ball pitcher in an environment where most offense is generated by home runs, I mean, you have the potential to dominate. And I think Sonny Gray's there. Granted, he's faked us out a couple times in the past. He's been the most annoying player to own probably in dynasty leagues. But I think this time it's for real with Sonny Gray.
And I tend to agree with you. He was SP17 in Roto. He was SP23 in fantasy points per game. Scott, is it fair to say that he's better in Roto because he doesn't go as deep into games? He was just 50th in innings pitched per game started last season.
I haven't been thinking of him that way. I think the Reds are a very good team, have a great offense, and are certainly going to provide him run support. I'm curious if that changed, if he started pitching deeper when he started pitching well. And it looks like he did. Those final 15 starts, let's see. Only one, two, three of those final 15 starts were less than six innings. So, yeah, I don't really think workload's an issue for Sonny Gray.
Yeah, one of the, I think, underrated aspects of last season's kind of breakout for Sonny Gray was the fact that he was reunited with pitching coach Derek Johnson, who came over from the Milwaukee Brewers. And Derek Johnson was actually Sonny Gray's pitching coach back in college at Vanderbilt. So I thought that it was really interesting that they got to work together and Sonny Gray broke out the way that he did last year. The curveball and the slider were the best that we've ever seen out of Sonny Gray. Chris, who is the pitcher that you avoid most from this group?
It's probably Mike Soroka, although Brandon Woodruff's not far. I don't trust the stuff for Brandon Woodruff. He throws incredibly hard, and that is one of the ways that we typically define stuff. But, you know, he really, when you look at the, you know, the whiff rates and the success rates and all that, he kind of is just a two-pitch pitcher. And really, it's two different versions of the same pitch. It's the fastball. He's got really good fastballs. His whiff rates on his four-seamer and his sinker are elite for those pitches. The problem is, one, he throws those pitches 63% of the time, 64% of the time, which is quite a lot. And he just doesn't get as many whiffs on the slider and changeup as you typically see. And so it leaves him incredibly reliable on that fastball for strikeouts. And that's just typically not a profile that we see. I think he's a relatively high floor pitcher because he does do a really, really good job of avoiding hard contact. I don't buy the strikeout rate jump last season. I think there's regression coming there.
Brandon Woodruff, a 3.62 ERA, a 1.14 whip last season. He was SP20 in fantasy points per game. Scott, I have a bunch of meters that I'm going to break out today. And the first one is the legit-o-meter. Where would you rank Brandon Woodruff on the legit-o-meter, 1 to 10?
Okay, it's always difficult when you haven't calibrated these meters yet. you're afraid of going too high or too low and with future picks. I'm going to say Woodruff is a 7 on the legit-o-meter. I share some of Chris's concerns for him, though more from like a dynasty perspective than a 2020 perspective.
27. Like,
yeah, I'm not sure his profile is going to age well because he's so fastball reliant. It reminds me a little of Matt Harvey, frankly.
In 30 seconds or less. Well, first of all, does anyone have a retort against me basically hating Trevor Bauer for fantasy baseball?
On the one hand, you could make a pretty reasonable argument that you could just stream a starting pitcher spot and get somewhat close to him, at least in run prevention. But, you know, the stability of a guy who's going to go deep into games, and they actually, interestingly enough, have talked about him pitching every fourth game.
Yep. He may lap everybody in terms of innings this year.
Which, if that's actually something they do at least a few times and he gets to 15 starts instead of 12,
mm-hmm.
that actually, you know, presuming the ERA is not horrible, and for as upsetting as his 2019 season was, his ERA wasn't, like, team-destroying. And if he gets it into, like, more like the high threes rate, you know, that kind of inning surplus with his strikeout rate and, you know, the fact that he's usually decent at whip could be very, very valuable. But he's definitely someone I settle for, not someone I reach for.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way of putting it. But it is important to remember, like, there's the most likely scenario and then there's the upside. And the upside, I mean, he was the best pitcher in the AL in 2018, I think. Probably would have won the Cy Young if he hadn't gotten hurt there at the end.
Just ask him.
And even last year, before he got traded to Cincinnati, he had a 3.79 ERA, 1.21 WHIP, 10.6 K per nine. The long ball killed him last year, and it killed a lot of pitchers. Obviously, record-setting year, but he changed his pitch selection in a way that invited more long balls. Didn't throw his curveball as much, and the curveball was really the key to his whole breakout. So that was curious. Chris has referred to Bauer before as a tinkerer, and actually talked heading into last year that he worried he might tinker his way out of success, and it kind of happened, kind of played out exactly that way. Hopefully he tinkers his way back into it.
Good thing I listened to myself and didn't have him as the number four starting pitcher in fantasy baseball last spring.
I'm right there with you, Chris. Maybe it's because I got burned by him, and that's not how you're supposed to play fantasy, but I think I spent $35 on him in a 15-team auction last year, just completely sunk me. Yeah, I mean, a 4.48 ERA over 213 innings last year, it's pretty bad, Chris. So I can't do it. Look, other people want to chase the upside of 2018.
It's not.
You could try it, but I'm not doing it with Trevor Bauer.
But again, I wonder what happened with his move from Cleveland to Cincinnati. If it was just a matter of going to a small park, and again, his profile was not set up last year, at least, to prevent home runs, maybe that was entirely it. But for his 24 starts with Cleveland, like, he was a must-start pitcher. He wasn't contending for a Cy Young award or anything, but it was appropriate to the range he's being drafted, the way he performed in those 24 starts with Cleveland.
Round 10, Zach Wheeler, 109.2 is the ADP. Frankie Montas, 110.6. Jesus Luzardo, 116.6. Lance Lynn, 117. And Zach Gallen at 120. Guys, how are we handling Zach Wheeler? Because his wife is due in July, and apparently he's considering opting out of the season. So you shouldn't be drafting right now, and hopefully, you know, a couple of weeks from now, we will know what Zach Wheeler is doing. But how are you guys just handling Zach Wheeler right now?
This is probably too high for him, given that, you know, even if he doesn't opt out of the season, I think he's talked about he'll likely miss two starts.
Mm-hmm.
And given that that's 17% of the season, roughly, that you got to downgrade him, unfortunately.
Yeah, and this might be too high for him anyway.
Yeah, I mean, he's sort of, I think people view him as like a sort of high upside starting pitcher. Like, he throws really hard, and there's this idea that he might be like this really good strikeout pitcher, but he actually really isn't. He doesn't get a lot of swings and misses. He's actually a lot like Jose Berríos. And early on in the spring, I was actually making the why draft Jose Berríos when you can get Zach Wheeler argument. I think that the case for Zach Wheeler at this point has been, he's been really consistent the last couple of years, at least in terms of his overall numbers. The highs and lows in season have been a little frustrating, but, you know, he seemed like someone you could probably rely on for a decent number of strikeouts, decent number of innings, decent rate stats.
Yeah.
Now, you know, that kind of goes out the window when he's going to have less volume than everyone else, probably.
I think since you brought it up, Frank, it's worth addressing that I don't think he's going to sit out the season. Obviously, he's been asked about it. He's talked about it. The way he put it was he wondered if he would at one point, but he feels pretty safe right now. And I think that's probably most every player sentiment. So I'm not really singling Zach Wheeler out for that. I mean, obviously anybody could choose to sit out at any point, but I am singling him out for the likelihood he misses his first couple turns through the rotation, because that's what his wife's do.
Lance Lynn was a top 20 starting pitcher in both formats last season. He is currently SP30 off the board. His first five starts last year, he had a 6.51 ERA, 7.8 K per nine. His last 28 starts, a large majority of the season, 3.24 ERA, 11 Ks per nine for Lance Lynn. Scott, you are wearing the Texas Rangers hat. You are the representative of Lance Lynn himself. The trust-o-meter. We're going to trust. What is the trust-o-meter for Lance Lynn? Let's say as your SP4.
Oh, so you're putting separate terms on it. As my SP4, it's like a nine.
But probably, I feel like you can consistently get him as your SP4, right, Scott?
I often get him as my SP4.
Yep.
Yeah, and sometimes I've gotten him as my SP5, and that's like a 10 at that point. Because, you know, there's obviously less. You're not as concerned about the downside when you're getting that deep into building your pitching staff. So that's why I put it that way. On a general level, I would put my trust at a 7, about where I put Woodruff. I mean, obviously, just look at Lance Lynn's track record. There's a chance what he did last year was a total fluke. But he's not getting drafted anywhere close to the presumption that it's legit. You know, he was a Cy Young caliber pitcher last year, especially from May 1st on. May 1st on, he had like a 3.12 ERA, I think. 3.32 ERA. He was really good. He was seventh in innings, seventh in strikeouts, just pitched like a frontline pitcher in a way that's not really supported by his ADP. And if, you know, he changed his pitch selection a little, I think maybe to maximize the swing and miss potential of his fastball. And if he's able to sustain that, then he's a great value here. If he's not, if he regresses back to prior Lance Lynn, then he's probably waiver fodder. But I don't think the risk, I think the reward here is greater than the risk at this point.
We spoke about Montas as a breakout candidate. I think across the board, we all like Montas, right, Scott? You could agree with that? Okay.
Yeah, I do. I think I actually might like Lance Lynn more because the strikeout upside is especially high for Lance Lynn for this range of where we're drafting. But yeah, I like Montas. I'm mostly buying into that with the introduction of the splitter.
We addressed the Lizardo situation at the top of yesterday's show. If you want to go back and listen to that, Zach Gallen, Chris, I know that you're a big fan as well. In 30 seconds or less, tell me why he is a breakout candidate this season.
He is a guy who, for one thing, unlike a lot of young pitchers, he's ready for a full workload. He can go deep into games. He's got four pitches that he can throw in any count to any batter. And all four of them rated out pretty well last season. He's got the fastball, curve, cutter, and changeup. And I think he's just better than what he showed in the majors last season. I think some people will look at the ERA being a lot lower than the peripherals, you know, the FIP, the Sierra, XFIP, et cetera, and say that there's regression coming. However, I would counter that, you know, he had uncharacteristic control problems in the majors last season, and really it was just two starts. I think it was consecutive starts where he walked 5-1 and 6 in the other. Other than that, he had the same very good control he's had his entire professional career. So I really don't think there's that much risk there, and I think the upside is he can be a top 12 pitcher.
Mercy! That was a minute. You had 30 seconds, Chris. How dare you?
I mean, honestly, that's on you. You're the guy with the button.
I know. I always feel bad cutting you guys off because you're making good points.
Don't ever feel bad about cutting me off.
All right, I'm going to promote a few things real quick. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can see Scott in his fantastic Texas Rangers hat. I am wearing a Pittsburgh Pirates baseball shirt, and Chris has a beautiful yellow mustard shirt on today that you could see only on our YouTube channel, Fantasy Baseball Today. Go to YouTube, just throw Fantasy Baseball Today in the search, and you'll be able to find us. And reminder that you can listen to us on any podcasting platform, but specifically on Spotify. You can follow us there, and we have playlists set up for our position previews and for all of the mock drafts that we have spoke about on this podcast. All right, we come back. We will get into rounds 11 and on in ADP here, Fantasy Baseball Today.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Round 11 in ADP looks like this. Madison Bumgarner, 121. Denelson Lamet, 122.8. Eduardo Rodriguez, 125.2. Carlos Carrasco, 125.8. Hyunjin Ryu, 127.8. Shohei Ohtani, 128.2. Max Fried, 132. A lot of pitchers going in this round, around this range for starting pitchers. Scott, let's start off with this. I've got another meter for you. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
The breakout-o-meter for Denelson Lamet. Where does he rank on that meter?
I have him in my breakouts column, so it should be a pretty high number. I'll go with 7 again. I do think some in the community, the fantasy baseball community, are maybe a little too confident in his breakout potential, considering he's basically a two-pitch pitcher who I don't think we can be totally sure is going to deliver the kind of workload that would make him a must-start player. But there's obviously tons of strikeout potential for Denelson Lamet. And his first full year back from Tommy John surgery, he could be a pretty big deal.
Eduardo Rodriguez has tested positive for COVID, which means I would say his status for opening day is probably in doubt. At least it's in question. And I think that there were already reasons to be skeptical of him. Last year, he had that big second half. But if you look at the underlying numbers, he actually walked more batters during that time. His xFIP was not great. So I think it's a little bit fluky what we saw from Eduardo Rodriguez in that second half. Chris, Shohei Ohtani, is he a roto and head-to-head categories only pitcher for you? Because in head-to-head points, I just don't know how much volume he's going to give you on a per-start basis.
Shohei Ohtani, for me, is a daily league only guy.
Okay.
Unless you play in a format that lets you, that gives you both points for hitting and pitching at the same time in a weekly league, which none really do that. Unless you draft two different versions of him. He made a sim league start or a sim game start yesterday, and it was really bad. And that doesn't necessarily mean, he will be bad, but he threw 15 of 51 pitches for strikes. He had,
that is really
Scott,
bad.
Was it eight walks?
Eight walks and three innings. Yeah.
Wow.
The guy's coming back from Tommy John surgery, and usually that goes well. But it doesn't always go well. He made it through 60 innings in the majors before needing Tommy John surgery. I think he's going to be very good eventually, but there's absolutely no guarantee he's going to be very good right now. And I don't think there's any guarantee that you're going to get a lot of volume from him. You're certainly almost never going to get any two-start weeks out of him because You know, the Angels are probably going to stick with him pitching every sixth day and every fifth rather than every fifth day.
Yeah.
And so it just, it doesn't seem like there's any room for profit in a weekly league in either Roto or head to head points. Like, in order for him to, especially in even in Roto, in order for him to really provide a ton of value as your 128th overall pick, you know, that's probably your starting pitcher four range. He's going to have to be one of the best pitchers in baseball on a per inning basis. And there's just not a lot of room margin for error at that cost.
Scott, Carlos Carrasco last year, his first 12 starts, hit a 4.98 ERA. The underlying number is still pretty good, though. 3.48 xFIP, a 10.9 K per nine, 1.5 walks per nine. So the underlying numbers for Carrasco were good, and it comes out that later on we find out he was obviously diagnosed with leukemia, and he returned to the bullpen later on in the season. We had some doubt, some question marks as to whether or not he was actually going to play this season because of everything that's going on regarding COVID. As of now, it seems like he's going to be good to go. He has SPARP eligibility as well. Where do you kind of fall with Carlos Carrasco here, Scott?
I'm not eager to draft him myself, but I didn't see much skills decline last year either, for as bad as the numbers are. It's the concern with Carlos Carrasco is entirely how he bounces back from his leukemia battle. And then, you know, there's the added risk of him needing to drop out at some point since he is a higher risk individual. But yeah, I have no idea how it's going to play. I'm not sure if he's going to have the same stuff. If he's going to be able to sustain it as deep into games, I just don't know. So it's a total wild card. But of course, he's been a reliable fantasy pitcher in the past, a high end guy. So it's appropriate value here, I think, factoring in the risk.
Chris, who do you find yourself drafting most from this group? Mad Bum, Lamet, Eduardo Rodriguez, Carrasco, Hyunjin Ryu, Otani, Max Fried.
It's probably Ryu. I get
the most or the least.
The most.
Yeah, I agree.
Has the hate gone too far for Ryu?
Do people really question that he's very good?
Last 44 starts, he has a 2.21 ERA.
But even before that, like, injuries have been a real concern, although it rarely was arm issues. I believe it was more like groin and lower leg issues.
Yeah.
Even before that, though, he had a 3.77 ERA in 2017 in 126 innings, and he was dealing with injuries, obviously. And then before, in 2013 and 2014, before he missed 2015 and most of 2016, he had a 3.17 ERA in 344 innings. He's not a high strikeout guy, but he's not a nothing there either. And he does a great job keeping runs and base runners off the board. I have very little doubt Hyunjin Ryu is going to be very good, even away from the Dodgers. And, you know, I guess there are some workload concerns that they might not let him pitch all that deep into games.
Yeah, I think those are out the window now.
Yeah,
60-game season.
With a shortened season, and especially if they get off to a hot start and they're competitive, like, why would they?
Yeah, this season is built for
what you're hoping
like
to get
Ryu.
From Mike Soroka, I think you're probably going to get from Hyunjin Ryu.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah, and you're getting quite a few spots of value there. You're getting Ryu at...
nearly 40 spots later.
127.8, and Soroka is going at 88. So, yeah, that's 40 spots of value there. Good point there. Rounds 12 through 14 in ADP. Kyle Hendricks, Julio Urias, Robbie Ray, Mike Minor, Matthew Boyd, Sean Manaea, Kenta Maeda, and I'm going to throw Rich Hill in this mix, Scott, because we've done three mocks in the past couple of weeks, and his ADP, where he was selected in those three drafts, 133, 134, and 152. We were all on board as Rich Hill a month ago as a sleeper because he was someone you could get with your last round pick. At this point, if he's going 130 to 150... that's basically where he's been drafted the past couple of seasons. Is it worth it?
Yeah, I think it is worth it because I think he's even more valuable in a 60-game season coming off this kind of questionable procedure on his elbow than he would be in 162-game season, because 162-game seasons, you know he's not going to be around for all of it. 60-game season, very good chance he is. And ratio-wise, you look at his numbers just the last 3 years with the Dodgers, you go back further, they're probably even better, frankly. But the last 3 years, I mean, that's a top 10 pitcher, what he's doing in terms of ERA, whip and strikeouts. And he threw four innings, I think, in his first sim start. And the Twins talked about him being, you know, fully extended for the start of the season. So that's not going to be an issue. I think he's a real gem here for this season specifically.
If Rich Help makes 12 starts, which would be pretty much every start, top 15 starting pitchers, top 20.
Look, the Twins have maybe the best offense in baseball. They have one of the best bullpens in baseball. He's got the supporting cast. Obviously, he has the stuff himself. I think it's completely possible. Like, I don't think it's in a 60 game season, the inherent variability, like Rich Hill could be top five potentially. I don't think it's a crazy idea.
And there's obviously coming back from a surgery or a procedure that, you know, is pretty much untested. You know, he did tear his UCL. It is possible that he stays healthy and just isn't good.
Right. And he's 40.
But we haven't seen that from him yet.
Sure.
Yeah, Rich Hill, I was going to say top 10 is probably where he can settle in if everything works out. This stat, since 2016, among starting pitchers with at least 400 innings pitched, he has a 3.00 ERA, that is sixth best, a 10.6 K per nine, that is ninth best, and a 1.08 whip, which is eighth best. All three of those marks are inside the top 10, so I don't think that would surprise anybody. Scott, among this group, Hendricks, Arias, Robbie Ray, Minor, Boyd, Manaea, Maeda, Hill. Who do you draft most?
I'd like to say Hill, but Phil Penebchek keeps hopping in those mock drafts and taking him instead. I think he's done it every time, so he's contributing to that ADP going up. It's probably Matthew Boyd because he's such an outlier for strikeouts, and you know, if he makes some of the improvements Chris talked about earlier, then he's potentially an ace. I wish he pitched for any other team than the Tigers.
Yeah,
because he's not going to win many games. Probably not going to win many games, no matter how well he pitches there. But he's, in terms of upside, I'm just seeing Maeda's in this group too. I draft Maeda a lot. Boyd, Maeda, and Hill. Upside wise, they really stand out. I could put Julio Arias in there for the upside too, but they're going to be like, I'm not sure how deep he's going to pitch into games. I think the Dodgers could piggyback with him, so I'm a little more cautious with him. But these are kind of the ultimate fallback options for me if I'm looking for a high ceiling guy who also has a reasonably good floor too. Boyd, Maeda, and Hill, I like for that. This is also getting to the range of starting pitchers where I start to not like the pitchers. Like I genuinely don't want them. And that would include guys like Robbie Ray.
I like every guy in this group.
Yeah.
And I draft them all frequently. Robbie Ray is probably the one I draft the least, but Kyle Hendricks, I think, is a great value here. Kyle Hendricks is an awesome stabilizing force.
You have to have good strikeouts already.
Sure. Yes. But, you know, you should.
Yeah. He's so boring, but he's so good. He doesn't excel.
Year, it's just like, oh, Kyle Hendricks isn't that good. Oh, Kyle Hendricks is going to fall off. He's not going to keep pitching like this. And it's just like, just keep printing money by drafting Kyle Hendricks until it stops working.
Four straight seasons, a 3.46 ERA or less. During that time, he has a 1.11 whip, which is 12th best among starting pitchers. So he's not going to give you many strikeouts, but I think specifically for ERA and whip, he could be quite helpful. All right, guys, let's do a little bit of rapid fire like we did for the outfield preview 2.0 part 2. I'm going to give you guys 30 seconds for each of these players, and you just tell me, do you target this pitcher? Is he an active target of yours? Yes, no, meh. Scott, get us started with Carlos Martinez.
He has been an active one for me. I think he's similar to Hendricks, but with more strikeout potential. Not a huge strikeout guy, but more than Hendricks. Now there's a question about his role, though, so I might back off him a little. I still think he has the leg up in that fifth starter competition, but they're keeping their options open since he was delayed arrival for camp. They want to see how he looks and how built up he already is.
Chris, Jake Odorizzi, another one of those Twins pitchers, could get a lot of run support, some solid matchups in this shortened season. What do you think about Odorizzi?
I'm pretty mad on him. I wouldn't say I'm not targeting him, but he's not someone I typically draft. it was such an outlier for strikeout rate for him. I mean, 27.1% rate. His previous high in the last five seasons was 22.8. That it's just, I just don't quite buy it.
Scott, Lance McCullers, we haven't seen him since 2018. Is he someone you actively target?
I'm fine with him. I wouldn't say I actively target him, but he has big strikeout upside. He's a great ground ball pitcher, obviously a good supporting cast. And I think now that he's further removed from Tommy John surgery, the workload should be pretty good at the start of the year. I don't know why I don't end up with more of him. I think my pitching's just full by the time he goes off the board usually, but I like McCullers fine.
Chris, Masahiro Tanaka, we talked about your boy, Giancarlo Stanton, hit him in the head with a line drive. We don't really know what his status is going to be. Mild concussion. But what do you think about Tanaka?
So he was another guy like Edwin Diaz who struggled with his grip on the ball on his signature pitch. In his case, it was the splitter. He experimented with different grips as the season went on and found a little bit of success late in the year. He is not someone I typically draft. No, it's more of a meh thing, but yeah, he doesn't have the upside I'm looking for when I'm usually filling out that spot in my lineup.
Scott, it was either last year or 2 years ago. I remember you were very much so in on Herman Marquez
last year.
What do you think? Yes, no, meh. He's going pretty late nowadays.
Well, I mean, this in the middle rounds he's going. I'm pretty meh on Marquez. He kind of showed the extent of his downside last year, and it's more of a Masahiro Tanaka situation for me, where I think like whoever rosters him in fantasy is going to need to start him, but he may end up doing just as much harm as good. I was a little more confident last year that he really turned things around at home after a poor start there in 2018. And he just didn't sustain that in 2019. It's just so hard to be a successful pitcher at Coors Field. And he showed that again with his home away splits while also losing some of his strikeout potential, it seemed like. So yeah, I'm not as high on Marquez this time around.
Chris, Mike Foltynewicz finished the season very strong. Target him? Yes, no, meh.
No. I did not believe in Mike Foltynewicz last season. I do not believe in Mike Foltynewicz now. I think he is pretty much the definition of just a guy. He's a slightly better version of Andrew Cashner. I do want to point out, if Herman Marquez is the number one pitcher,
Cashner,
in that he throws really hard and you think, wow, he's going to get a lot of strikeouts. And then it's like, oh, no, he doesn't really. I want to point out with Herman Marquez, if he is the opening day starter for the Rockies, and I believe he will be, and he pitches every fifth day, not every fifth game, but every fifth day, four of his first six starts would be on the road.
You
want to point that out.
That's a big if, but it's interesting,
I guess. It's a big if, but if that is the case, that's the way it lines up.
Okay.
You know, I've got to get a sound drop of Adam just singing the Luke Weaver song, but...
Luke Weaver!
Who needs Adam when we have Chris, who can sing it for us? Scott, what do you think? Luke Weaver.
I don't feel good about his health with the elbow. It was kind of an iffy situation that shut him down last year. One of those scenarios where you're not completely sure whether they should have just gone ahead with Tommy John for him. I was liking what he was doing before he got hurt, but I just don't think you can count on him to really be anything for you this year. So if you're looking for a lottery ticket, you can get them for cheaper than Weaver.
Chris, Marcus Stroman.
Hey. Why would you draft Mike Soroka, excuse me, when Marcus Stroman's there? Like what, 80 picks after? I think the case would be that we haven't seen the bad side of Mike Soroka in the way we have seen from Marcus Stroman. But that's not really an argument, I think. I like, that's just like they're very similar types of pitchers. And
You're going overboard with the Soroka shade here now. I'm gonna start to get offended on his behalf. Well, we know Stroman is a bad source of whip. Like even at his best, he's bad for whip.
Okay.
He's bad.
I guess
that'd be the main thing.
I guess I just look at them, they're very similar types of starting pitcher.
And yeah. A lot like, of
why would we necessarily think Mike Soroka will be a drastically better version. It's because he was better last year.
I don't think it's just that. He was 21 years old last year.
Right.
So I don't know that we really know who Mike Soroka is going to be fully yet. But right now he looks like a better version of Marcus Stroman, a more, how's Marcus Stroman in terms of throwing strikes? Because Soroka is one of the best, at least as far as we can tell, at limiting walks.
Marcus Stroman's
Stroman's not a good control.
He's slightly better than average in terms of walk percentage.
Yeah, so that contributes to the whip there.
Yeah.
Ground ball pitchers tend to give up more hits, and maybe Soroka will this year. But like Stroman, if you get a 1.25 whip from him, it's like it would be the best he's ever done since his rookie season.
Yeah, I guess my point is just that I don't see much upside with Mike Soroka. And if you're just like, if you're looking for that profile, I don't think that's a profile worth paying up for.
Mercy! All right, guys, we're going to wrap there. But on tomorrow's show, we will get into some of these late round names. There's like 10 more names I wanted to do with the rapid fire. And there's just a lot of upside starting pitchers late that we need to get into. So we will talk about that on tomorrow's episode with our mailbag as well. For Scott and Chris, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching on the Fantasy Baseball Today YouTube channel. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.